to Universität in Wien, and he will talk about optimal quantization.
Thank you very much. I should like to thank the organizers for giving me the opportunity to participate in this very, very interesting and nice conference. In this lecture, I will speak about integrals of the following form and of more general forms. J is a Jordan measure, Riemannian measurable subset of Euclidean D-space. S is a finite set consisting, say, of the points S1 up to Sn. And we consider this function. You may think of this integral as the volume above sea level of a mountain landscape which consists of n valleys. Each of the deepest points of these valleys are at sea level, and they correspond to the points of the set capital S. And the valleys have the form of pieces of rotational paraboloids. There arise two problems connected with these integrals. First, to determine the minimum of these volumes, and second, to determine the configurations S for which these minima are attained. At first sight, this seems to be a rather uninteresting question, but there are two remarks which I would like to make. First, the first remark is we are far away of giving precise solutions to these problems. And the second remark is that these problems surfaced over the last 50 years in very different areas of mathematics. The first appearance is in the late 1940s in the theory of data transmission. Then in the 1950s it was considered in discrete mathematics in the sense of the Hungarian school. Then again in a more general way it appeared in the 1960s in data transmission, and then in the 1970s in numerical integration. In the 1980s, perhaps I could not locate the first result in probability theory, and in the 1990s in convexity. At first, I will state the problems in a more general form, then give an idea of what has been achieved in the literature, then state some results, some new results, and finally give applications to data transmission, and if there is enough time, to approximation of convex bodies by polytopes and to the isoperimetric problem. We assume that on the Euclidean D-space, ED, there is given an additional norm, maybe different from the Euclidean norm. And similar problems are considered in Riemannian D-manifolds. If M is such a manifold, then by rho sub M and omega sub M, we denote the Riemannian metric and the Riemannian area measure on the manifold. J is a Jordan measurable subset either of Euclidean space or of this Riemannian space. W is a sort of weight function. We assume that it is continuous and positive on J. Finally, let F be a non-decreasing function on the positive reals. Then the problems arise to determine these expressions, first for the Euclidean case, but here the norm is another, maybe another norm. We consider the infimum extended over all sets S in ED consisting of n points, of the integral over J of this mountain landscape, but with an additional weight function, which is useful for some applications, and a similar expression for the Riemannian situation. This is the first problem, to determine these expressions. And the second problem is to determine, to describe, to give an idea of the minimizing sets. The first result in this area, which deals with more than one dimension, was given by Fee Stoth in 1953. It is the so-called moment theorem of Fee Stoth. It's a theorem of discrete geometry and says the following. Let f be a monotone increasing function on the positive reals and h a convex 3, 4, 5 or 6 gon, then for this minimum, for this infimum, holds an estimate in the following way. N times integral over Hn, f of no, here is the Euclidean norm, f of u du. You may think of this. H sub n is a regular hexagon of area 1/n of the area of the given set, and with center at the origin, you may think of this integral as the volume of a mountain landscape consisting of one valley above a hexagon. For this result, there are, I think, about 12 proofs known, none of them a simple proof. From the point of view of this result has many applications. I will speak about some of these, some possible applications later on. But the applications first were in discrete geometry, dealing with backing and covering problems. From the point of view of applications, an extension of this result to Riemannian two manifolds is suggested. And it's not too difficult to prove the following. Let f be a non-decreasing function, but now we assume that it satisfies a certain growth condition, which is not too restrictive. I will not give details. I can give details if you want later on. And let J be a short unmeasurable subset of the Riemannian two-manifold with positive measure. Then the infimum extended over all sets S in M consisting of n points of the integral over J of the minimum extended over all points B in this set S of F of the distance between B and X, d omega of X, is asymptotically equal to n times the integral we had before. Perhaps I should remark that this inequality in many cases is rather close, and these are the interesting cases, depending on the function f. But there are cases when the two sides of this inequality differ by arbitrarily large factors. But the interesting cases are covered more or less by this restriction that f satisfies a certain growth condition. So we have an asymptotic formula for this volume, for the minimum volume. If you consider these two theorems, then very roughly speaking, they say the following. In some extremal problems in the plane and in three-dimensional space, which are of an analytic or geometric character, the hexagonal arrangements are close to the optimal arrangements. Of course, this is well known for many problems of discrete geometry, but not only of discrete geometry. Much more difficult is the converse question. What can be said about the optimum configurations? Of course, it's very plausible to think that in this case also the hexagonal arrangements are the optimal arrangements are hexagonal, but the proof is much more difficult. The pertinent theorem is the following. Let f, m, j, h sub n, b, s in the second theorem and assume that S sub n is a sequence of sets in this manifold M. This is a two-manifold here, a Riemannian two-manifold, such that S, each set S sub, the set S sub n consists of n points, and such that the asymptotics of the corresponding landscape are close to the optimum asymptotics. The asymptotics are the same for this set, this sequence of sets S sub n. So we relax a little bit. We are not considering only the optimum configurations, but admit other configurations too. Then, as n tends to infinity, the set S sub n is asymptotically a regular hexagonal arrangement, a regular hexagonal pattern over the set S, over the set J, and the edge length of these hexagons, this hexagonal lattice or whatever you may call it, the edge length is 2 times the area of J over square root of 3 times n to the 1 over 2. And secondly, S sub n, also a very plausible result, is distributed uniformly in the sense of uniform distribution theory, a branch of number theory, over the set J. After we have close contacts with the Rainy Institute for Mathematics, and I spoke many times about these problems to Gabor, with Gabor Feher-Stoth, and he could give a proof in the Euclidean space of a slightly more precise result than this. But essentially, the two results are the same. Concerning this remark on uniform distribution, this goes back to an idea. I took the idea of considering this from a paper by Schneider and Glashauer. And I must admit that this is a shame, because Vienna is one of the strongholds of uniform distribution theory, and I did not have the idea by myself. The proof of this theorem is difficult. It's very difficult. Next, I will state some results in general dimensions. The first result, of which I am aware, was given in the context of data transmission by Saadoa. He first, I think, stated this result in 1966, and it was circulated in an internal paper of the Bell Company. It was published only in 1982 and says that for particular monotone increasing functions, f of t is equal to t to the alpha, one can describe the asymptotics of this infimum in the following sense. There is a constant depending on the dimension and on alpha, such that this expression is asymptotically equal to the constant times a certain integral involving the density function times 1 over n to the alpha over v. This same result was rediscovered in the Riemannian case by myself and then by Glashauer and myself in the context of approximation of convex bodies. We considered the case alpha equal 2, which there is important, but this doesn't matter very much, and then again in numerical integration. And all three independent proofs were based on an idea which first seems to have had Hammersley. You should know Hammersley. He was from England, I think. And Hammersley... and Hammersley spoke about this idea with Sadoa. But in some sense, this is the right idea to apply in this context. Then, in a little bit later, first I should like to say that such problems were considered in the context of the estimates of the error of numerical integration formulas, mainly by the Dniepropetrovsk School of Integration, which I think was established by Babenko. I am not sure. And the last result of which I am aware in this belonging to this school is a result due to Chornaya also. And it says the following. If the function f is a modulus of continuity, that is, it is a non-decreasing function on the positive reals, which satisfies this functional inequality, and if in addition this function f satisfies a certain growth condition, very similar to our growth condition, then for any norm and any continuous weight function, we have again the right as the same asymptotics for this infimum expression. But here, instead of the function f, small f, a related function, capital F, enters, and this function is defined as the integral from 0 to t of s to the d minus 1, d is always the dimension, times f of s ds. And the alpha which appears here is extracted from the function f, and this can't be done since f or capital F satisfies a certain growth condition. I will not describe the details. Considering this result, it is possible to eliminate the assumption that F is a modulus of continuity, more or less at least. This is the content of the following result. Let F be a non-decreasing function which satisfies a certain growth condition, and let alpha be the corresponding constant. Norm, let be a norm on ED, not necessarily the Euclidean norm. Then there is a constant, which I don't know why I have called many years ago diff, indicating that this constant is connected with Dirichlet and Voronoi. And this constant depends on F and on the norm, and in this way also on the dimension, such that for any short unmeasurable set capital J in ED with positive volume, and for any continuous function W which is positive on J, we have this asymptotics for this infimum expressions. So the asymptotics are rather simple to state. The proof of this theorem is also rather difficult. To this theorem, there corresponds a similar theorem in the Riemannian case, and in a sense, both theorems are proved in the same way. So, at least for this expression, we have the idea how it behaves for large n. For some applications, it is useful to assume that the set S is not chosen in the bigger space ED or M, but in the set J. But this doesn't change the situation, essentially. We have the same asymptotic formula, and later on also the same results. So the first question, we have, so to say, a weak answer to the first question, but this answer is useful in different contexts. Much more difficult is the second question, to describe the minimizing configurations as sub n. There is a conjecture of Jershow of 1979 for the case that the function f is either d squared or perhaps more general d to the power alpha and for the Euclidean norm. He says that there exists a polytope B, and we assume for simplicity that this polytope has volume 1, such that the Dirichlet-Voronoi cells of the minimizing configuration S sub n, that is the set of points U in the set J, for which the distance to the ith point of Sn is less or equal than the distance to the other points in S sub n, is in a particular sense, which can be made more precise in a rather simple way, is asymptotically congruent to a homothetic copy of the polytope B. That's the conjecture of Jershow. For dimension 2, this conjecture is an immediate consequence of this stability theorem, of the first part of the stability theorem. It's easy to show. And the conjecture can be stated not only for the Euclidean set space, but also for the Riemannian space. So it's an immediate consequence. And statements in the literature that it is a consequence of earlier results of Laszlo Feyerstoth of the 1950s and of Newman of the 1980s are wrong. So it seems that the first proof of this conjecture for dimension 2 is the proof we have obtained now. Perhaps I should like to remark that my proof of the stability theorem for the plane, for the Riemannian manifolds, is a rather analytic proof, whereas the proof of Gabor Feyerstoth is a much more geometric proof. It is unclear whether the conjecture of Jershow is true in dimension greater or equal than 3. I have no idea and no feeling whether the conjecture is true or not. And if it is true, the proof definitely is very, very hard. I have the impression that it should be much harder than the proof of the sphere backing problem, much harder.
There is a B.
What? There is such a polytope B. Such that the cells of...
There exists polytope?
Yes. And this polytope is a very particular polytope. It admits a tiling of the space by congruent copies. And secondly, it is a certain Dirichlet cell, a certain Dirichlet-Voronoi cell.
When you say Dirichlet,
Voronoi cell. Well, there are many other names for these cells. Maybe in crystallography they have a different name, in geography they have a different name. Biologists have. No, that's the original. And I think if the conjecture is true, which is unclear, but if it is true, then the points of the minimizing configurations are spaced even more regularly than the conjecture indicates. I think that then there is a crystallographic group such that the points of the minimizing configuration are the images of a fixed point under motions of the crystallographic group. So it's even more regular. But I think at the moment there is no chance to give a proof. In higher dimensions, we do not know whether the conjecture is true or not, but some positive, rather weak statements can be made. And to state these results, I will introduce two notions of uniform distribution of regularity of finite sets in J. The first is uniform distribution in the sense of number theory. We say that the sequence S sub n of sets Sn, each set Sn consisting of n points, is uniformly distributed in J with respect to a certain density if for each shorter measurable subset K of J, K contains the right share of points of S sub n. K contains the right share of points of S sub n. The second notion goes back to Voronoi, but it's named after Delaunay because Delaunay investigated this notion very carefully. Let beta and gamma be positive constants, then we say S sub n is a beta over n to the 1 over d, gamma over n to the 1 over d Delaunay set, if any two points of S sub n have distance at least beta over n to the 1 over d, and for any point of J, there is a point of S sub n at distance at most gamma over n to the 1 over d. So this is the notion of Delaunay sets. And with these definitions in mind.
Some question about previous slide. And
yes.
In conjecture for this polytope,
yes.
On alpha,
no, it does not depend on n.
Okay.
Even if it would depend on n, it would be a great result. But you said on alpha, not on
alpha.
N. I think it should depend on alpha. It should depend on alpha. And I am not sure whether in the original article of Jershow the conjecture has been stated for these functions f of d equal to d to the alpha. Maybe only for and this is the most important case, d squared.
Just perhaps there is less possibility to have p than to have alpha below 2. This is what I see. So.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But for me, this is one of the...
Very rigid.
Yes. But I like this conjecture very much. But the literature in... This is an article from data transmission, and the literature coming from data transmission is very difficult to understand. I think some of those who are present also tried to read such articles. They are written mainly by engineers, and these engineers have a great mathematical knowledge, but not a very precise one. And so their proofs are more or less descriptions of possible proofs. Whether the things are really proved remains doubtful. The next theorem is as it should be. Let F satisfy, again, a certain growth condition. Let norm be a norm on ED, not necessarily the Euclidean norm, and let J be a shorter measurable set with positive volume, such that the boundary is not too fussy. So the boundary should be more or less well-behaved. And let W be a continuous weight function. And we assume that the sequence S sub n consists of minimizing configurations. Then, as the result is to be expected, there are constants beta and gamma greater than zero, such that S sub n is a beta over n to the 1 over d, gamma over n to the 1 over d Delaunay set, and S sub n is uniformly distributed on J with respect to the density W, to the D over alpha plus D. And here again, this alpha comes from the function F. This result is very plausible. What else should such a result be? Unfortunately, the proof is difficult. I have to go back to the last result. First, if you consider this result and theorem 4 is missing. And theorem 4. The order of the proof is crazy. First one proves the Delaunay property. Then using the Delaunay property, the asymptotic formula is proved. And then using the asymptotic formula, the statement about uniformity is proved. So, it's crazy. In the last part of my lecture, I will speak about applications. I have selected the following: minimum distortion of vector quantizers, approximation of convex bodies, and the isoperimetric problem. A data transmission system consists of the following. There is a source which produces signals. The signals then are the input for an encoder, and the output is code words, the code words taken from a finite code book consisting of finitely many code words. Then the code words are transmitted via a channel, and the result is possibly the same code word, possibly a different word. And this is then the input for a decoder, and the decoder produces a signal. I will consider the first part of this process. And I will describe a particular case, but an important particular case. We consider a set J in Euclidean D space, and every point of J is a signal. This set J is decomposed into n sets, C, capital C sub 1 up to capital C sub n, non-overlapping sets. And in addition, we are given n points, n vectors, C1 to Cn, either in J, not necessarily in J. These are the code words. The code book consists precisely of these code words. And then we consider the following encoding process. Given a signal S, that is a point of J, we assign to this signal S the code word CI if the signal is contained in the I-th set capital CI. Considering this situation, the problem arises to have an idea about the quality of this encoding process. And common measures for the quality of this encoding process are the so-called distortions. They can be defined in the following way. Given a signal U, consider the code word corresponding to U. Then the Euclidean, or a more general distance between the code word and U, gives an idea of the loss of information if U is replaced by the code word CI. And in some cases, this loss of information is made more precise. This depends on the type of what is encoded, the speech or the sight, or there are different ideas. It's not just the norm, but a function of the norm. And sometimes one puts a weight function. This could be the density of the signals or something else. And then one considers the average of this, so to say the average distortion. In the sense, we consider the integral over Ci of this expression, and then we sum from 1 to n. This is so-called vector distortion of our encoding process. And it is very easy to see that this distortion becomes smaller if the sets Ci have the property that Ci is contained in the Dirichlet-Voronoi cell of the ith code word of Ci. This is easy to see. And I have written here contained in, since the Dirichlet cells may overlap. And this is due to the fact that the norm is not necessarily a strictly convex norm. So, if we make this assumption that the set Ci is contained in Di, then it can be seen easily that this expression assumes the following form: integral over the whole set J of the minimum extended over all code words of F of norm C minus U, W of U, du. And considering this expression, it is clear that the minimum possible distortion is the infimum.
You have now any norm, not only
any norm.
Then Voronoi cells are not convex.
Yes, I do not worry about that. I do not worry. And they may overlap. That's the main problem. By no means they are convex. But they are measurable. That's sufficient. So, for the minimum distortion of this vector encoding process, of this vector quantization, we get precisely the expression we considered before. And for this reason, the theorems we considered before, including the theorems giving information on the minimizing configurations, yield the following result. Let F alpha norm, the constant diff, which depends on F and the norm, the set J and the weight function W, be as before. Then for the minimum distortion of a vector quantizer on J with n code words, we obtain the following asymptotic formula. It is as n tends to infinity, asymptotically equal to this constant diff, times a certain integral involving the density function, times f of 1 over n to the 1 over d. And if, in addition, the set J is connected and the boundary is not too wild, so it should not, it's not necessary to have a smooth boundary, but it should not be too fussy, then S sub n is a certain Delaunay set, and it is uniformly distributed with respect to the density W to the d over alpha plus d. So, as was to be expected, the optimum code book is distributed in a certain sense rather regularly, and the conjecture is, of course, it's even much more regularly distributed about the set J. There exist similar results for the approximation of probability measures by discrete probability measures using the Kantorowicz-Wasserstein metric, and also for the error of numerical integration formulas. In the last 5 or 8 minutes, I will first speak about volume approximation of convex bodies by convex polytopes, and then about the isoperimetric problem. It's a particular pleasure for me to speak here about volume approximation or approximation of convex bodies, since I think Vitale Schneider is not here. I have given him a preprint of this article. Then Monica Ludwig, Karol Beretsky, and Reitzner, maybe more. Of course, there is, so to say, a whole school around Shlomo Reisner. All these people contributed to volume approximation. I consider the approximation of convex bodies is a large book of results. I consider the following particular problem. Given the symmetric difference, or Nicodym metric, on the space of all convex bodies, we consider for a convex body C the space of all convex polytopes circumscribed to C and having n facets. And then we try, or one of the problems arising in this area is to try to determine the distance of the convex body in the sense of the symmetric difference metric to the best, to the nearest circumscribed polytope with n vertices. Of course, there are many other results. Schütt and Werner also contributed to this problem. I am sorry. And of course, there are many similar results. Here the result is dealing with circumscribed polytopes, but similar results hold in other cases. And the proofs, in some sense, are similar to each other. For the best, we denote the best approximating polytopes, that is, those for which this infimum is attained by P sub n. Then the results I have stated so far, or proofs of these results which have to be adapted to the situation, yield the following theorem. Let C be a convex body in Euclidean D space of differentiability class C3 with positive Gauss curvature of the boundary. Then the minimum distance of C to the circumscribed best approximating polytope with n facets is asymptotically equal to 1 over 2 times a certain constant diff, depending here only on the dimension, times the affine surface area of the convex body to the power d plus 1 over d minus 1 times 1 over n to the 2 over d minus 1. And the set where the polytope, where the facets of the polytope touch the convex body. This set is, as n tends to infinity, uniformly distributed over the boundary of the convex body with respect to surface area measure and a particular density depending on the Gauss curvature. And in addition, there is a constant delta greater than 1, such that the facets of the best approximating polytopes have an incircle which is not too small and a circumcircle which is not too big. In dimension 3, one can give much more precise results. There, the best approximating polytopes have asymptotically affine regular hexagons, more or less affine regular hexagons, and the edge length, in a suitable sense, of these affine regular hexagons are almost the same. There is some constant delta, such the convex body C is given, and depending on C, there exists such a constant delta. Depending on C.
And this uniform distributed on boundary, it is with respect to a fine surface.
Yes, 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 yes. I said with respect to this density, to this density. I didn't want to give too many details. The lecture contains already so many details. In dimension 3, more can be said. Of course, considering this result and comparing it with similar results in the literature, one should say that a direct proof of results dealing with this problem can be given to reduce the differentiability class from 3 to 2. I did this many years ago. Then Karoy Beretsky was able to eliminate the assumption that the Gauss curvature is positive, and this was a breakthrough, because in all proofs, from the point of the methodology of the proof, one always had to use this assumption, and he was able to eliminate this assumption. And then Karoy Beretsky and I could give much more precise asymptotic formulas. Finally, I will consider the isoperimetric problem for polytopes in Minkowski spaces. We consider a norm on Euclidean D-space, and in this normed space there arises the question, what is the right notion for volume and what is the right notion for surface area? Since convexity is translation invariant, the right notion, of course, is the ordinary volume up to a constant. But for the case of surface area, there have been made several proposals, and all of these proposals make sense. And I am aware of the proposals by Busemann, Benson, and Holmes-Thompson. And these proposals amount to the following. There exists a convex body, centrally symmetric with respect to the origin, and this body is related in a suitable way to the unit ball of the norm. But it's not necessarily the unit ball. And then the surface area of a convex body is defined in the Minkowski way to be the limit as epsilon tends to zero of the volume of C plus epsilon I minus the volume of C over epsilon. So one considers thin layers on the boundary of the convex body, the width of the layer depending on the isoperimetrics. With this notion of surface area and the given notion of volume, of course, one may investigate isoperimetric problems, maybe other problems of various types. And we consider the following problem. Consider polytopes with n facets. What is the minimum isoperimetric quotient using this notion of surface area? And how do the minimizing polytopes look like? And using a theorem of Descant, which says the following, and this theorem is a generalization of a theorem of Lindelöf of the 19th century. This theorem says the minimizing, the polytopes with minimum isoperimetric quotient in this sense are up to a homotety circumscribed to I. And they have minimum volume. And so the result which I stated before can be applied to yield the following theorem. Let I be an isoperimetric in ED of class C3, and this can be relaxed. With positive Gauss curvature also, this can be relaxed. And let B sub n be convex polytopes with minimum isoperimetric quotient with n facets and circumscribed to C. This can be achieved easily by homotety, and the homotety doesn't change the isoperimetric quotient. Then we have the following formula for the asymptotic formula for the isoperimetric quotient. Here enters the affine surface area. And in addition, we know that the minimizing polytopes P sub n have the property that the points where they touch the set, the convex body I, are uniformly distributed in some sense on the boundary of C, and their facets, the ratio between in radius and circumradius of the facets is bounded. With this remark, I should like to conclude my lecture. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for a most interesting lecture. Are there any questions or comments?
No, I have a question. What was your definition of an isoperimetric? More general.
The best expert in this field is here. So ask him. This is a convex body depending on the unit ball of the norm. Mm-hmm. I think it might be, depending on what definition of surface area you have in mind, it might be the polar body or something. Maybe not. The projection body.
The
I think.
Body
yes.
Of
yes.
Oh,
yes. So it was wise not to state. So, but in some sense, there is a close relation.
Can you quickly remind me what the Delaunay set is?
The Delaunay set is a set with the property that any two points are not too close to each other, and for each point of the underlying space, there is a point in the Delaunay set which is not too far away. In the Russian literature, this is the small r, capital R sets.
Any other questions? Then let's thank Professor Gruber again for your